And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. The apocalypse continues, and we're here as long as we are allowed internet to talk to you. My name is Kenny. Her name is Sandra. She lives in America. I live in the UK. Everything's fucked. Hi, Sandra. How are you?
Everything's fucked. It's less fucked for you than it is for me. I'm fine. I'm here. Things are happening. There's an apocalypse. That's the nice thing about, like, I'm always jealous of people who get to record with their co-host in studio on a regular basis, right? Because, like, it would be nice. I always like when you and I are together and we get to be, like, next to each other recording a podcast. And now it's kind of working out that we're in different countries and are so used to the Skype thing, because this is, we can practice social distancing over the internet because that's what we're used to doing.
Yeah, like, I find it more odd to podcast with you in person. I find that more strange.
I think it's because we're not used to it. Like, the first couple times we podcasted in person, I was, like, incredibly distracted by how often you're on your phone. But
that's just me. I'm always, because, you know, the reason that I'm mainly on my phone a lot of the time is because, and I can't even remember the exact example, but there was a time where Robert and I were podcasting, like, early days. Uh-huh. And we were doing the Strathclyde Fusion days, and it was like Thursday night, da da da, and I was not on my phone at all. And like a big news story broke.
Oh, yeah.
And we just looked like absolute idiots because we weren't talking about it and we weren't doing anything. So, yeah, but then the thing with you to counter it is you are very much like you are. If you're podcasting with Sandra in the room and she's there, like she's looking at you and making a lot of faces to you.
Half well, that's how I am. That's what I. So you just don't see all of my faces.
I see none of them, which is why when, because there's so many facial reactions, most of which do not make air because we're not on video. But like, it's very challenging that like you're so used to being very like present.
And I'm a very expressive person.
Yeah, and whereas I'm fairly used to like be doing seven things at one time, and that's kind of like I'm so. But the I was talking to Steve Gunn earlier, and he was like. You know, he would say, oh, you do this thing on a podcast where, like, you say, you respond to someone by saying, he mistakenly was like, if you're not listening to someone, and he's made a mistake here. He was like, sometimes you'll go, yeah, that's a totally valid point. I don't do that because I'm not listening. I'll do it because I don't have another question or angle to go to on that thing.
Right.
So that's my way to kind of be like, okay, I'll shut that down and go to the next thing. But he was like, and then he's like, sometimes I can tell when you've not watched a show, like, because you just do not have a clue what happened, and you try and just be like, so this person fought this person and this person won, and you describe nothing that happens.
Oh yeah, like I can tell when you haven't watched a show, but I don't know if everyone can tell when you haven't watched a show. I know you well enough.
I mean, I watch most things now that it's good, but I thought we could open this though with something. So we've given this plug before, I know it becomes kind of repetitive, but because we're not doing any live events, and that used to be the main source of income for the company, Patreon really is more important than ever before because it's keeping me afloat, it's keeping Sandra afloat, it's keeping Finn afloat. It's very important. So if you do have a spare, you know, anything from a dollar up to 10 kind of thing or more, then patreon.com/insidetheropes. We have loads of bonus content we put up there. You know, we do the retro shows every week. We were actually supposed to be watching WrestleMania 2000 together next Thursday, but we can't because some stupid cunt in China decided to get a bat killed, and now we all need to fucking pay the price for it. But not that I'm salty in any way about China's...
Oh, I'm not salty about the coronavirus at all.
Not salty about the ways of killing animals that causes pandemic viruses. But anyway... So, you know, we do the retro shows, we do retro pay-per-views with Finn. For the Inside the Ropes podcast, this one you listen to, and the Power Slam, we do an overrun where we do a little bit of extra. So patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where we do all that. But the reason I brought it up was because on last week's overrun, I sort of riled Sandra up by bringing
I was riled. I was properly riled.
by bringing up Braun Strowman and his comments about independent wrestlers, where he felt they, by sort of asking for support through... He was mentioning GoFundMes. I've not seen anybody who's been like, hey, here's a GoFundMe. But, you know...
I've seen GoFundMes for, like, empty arena shows. Yeah, but not for individual wrestlers.
Yeah, like, because it's not like any individual wrestler's going, hey, can you just pay for me to live for the next 6 months?
No.
So, but you know, he was talking
a lot
about,
of them are pushing their merch stores and their Patreons where they provide content. And
as you should.
You know, similar things to what we're doing.
So Braun Strowman had made comments which made Sondra very angry.
Yes, that's true. Did you want me to get into it again? Because I can.
No. So I mean, this is a very niche reference, but there's in the it's on Netflix. If you've not watched it, it's a great series, The People versus O.J. Simpson, which is superb. And there's a scene in that series where, you know, for anybody who doesn't know the story, O.J. Simpson killed his wife and his this waiter, and he's on trial for it, and like he's hired all these really top attorneys to try and defend him, and the prosecution have all this evidence, but like they can't get a lot of it upheld because like DNA is not big enough back then. Anyway, there's the officer who found like all the evidence in the LAPD, Mark Furman his name was like a massive racist. And it came out during the trial that, in, you know, this is 94, 95, whatever. In the 80s, he had, like, been calling black people by the N-word. He had been, he, like, spoke at length about how he had beat black people up and, like, till their faces were mush and all this kind of stuff. And he walks in the second time to sort of be, you know, be on the witness stand again for what he did. And one of the prosecutors turns to another prosecutor and goes, you know, it takes a lot to be hated by both sides. And the reason I bring that up, not that Braun Strowman is Mark Furman, I'm not saying that, but Jim Cornette has even spoken out about Braun Strowman on this. And I
what?
Thought,
really?
And I thought you'd like to hear what Jim Cornette had to say about
Braun
Strowman.
Yeah. I have not seen Jim Cornette's response. I don't follow Jim Cornette on Twitter. It would just make me too angry.
But I thought you'd enjoy this. So here's what Jim Cornette had to say when he was asked on his drive-thru about Braun's comments about independent wrestlers. He had to say, up until 7 years ago, Strowman was a fucking bum. When you're as big and strong as Strowman, WWE notices you and basically pays you to go to school. He was paid to train, has a guaranteed contract, and gets paid whether he wrestles or not. He couldn't survive in the actual wrestling business. He never had to pay his dues. He got paid to train and learn and got a guaranteed contract. I don't understand why Strowman acts like it was their choice that their bookings got cancelled. This wasn't any of their fault. For a guy with guaranteed money to be down on them, fuck you, you big fat fuck, he's a fathead.
I mean, Jarnett and I agree on this.
Takes a certain type of person to be hated by both sides.
It really does. It really, really does. And I mean, like, he has to know that his comments were completely fucking stupid, right? Like, he is good pals with, like, Drake Maverick and EC3 and, you know, some dudes who actually have, like, you know, loved wrestling forever. So you'd think that maybe one of them could sit him down and say, look, sir, this was not the wisest
comments for you. He has not doubled down on it. You know, to be fair to him, he hasn't doubled down, which I think is basically the admission of guilt. But it's one of those things, whatever you say, you know, especially if you're going to be like, here's a cause or here's my stance on something, that you kind of now need to, like, back up. And, Cornette, actually, I was going through a rabbit hole of because I just don't have time to listen to a lot of podcasts. Like, I still have the Pod of Thunder, you know, Nitro the night after Starcade 98 to listen to. I've got so much to listen to, and it's difficult because I don't get to go out much, so I don't have time to like walk and listen. So with Cornette's podcast, I would usually listen to a fair amount of it, but because I don't have time, I'll sometimes go on his YouTube channel and just watch like clips and stuff. And there was a clip, this had bypassed me, I don't know how I didn't see it, but Jake Roberts was on like a podcast like recently, and he said that like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were the two worst WWF champions of all time. Worst. And said that like the Montreal Screwjob was really just them fighting over Sonny's pussy. So Cornette's asked about it, and he's like, well, clearly like he's pissed at one of them. And that's why he's saying this, because like There's no, he was like, you're saying they're the worst over Kevin Nash? Like, there's so many, like,
over 2000 Big Show?
Over Jinder Mahal? Like, you're saying that Bret and Shawn are the, like, what? Like, so, but I feel like with Jake, the reason I'm kind of comparing that to the Braun thing is because Cornette was like, you know, Jake must have some sort of animosity against Bret or Shawn to say that, because like, it's so ridiculous that it doesn't make any sense. And I wonder if Braun had a beef with somebody, or if he's just an idiot, or both.
It could be both, who knows.
But the other big news of the day is that, I mean, I woke up to this morning, Roman Reigns is out of WrestleMania 36. They taped WrestleMania Wednesday and yesterday. Roman's out. He basically made the call that, you know, because he's, what's the word? It's
immunocompromised.
That word that I can't say. I've tried so many times today to say it, I can't say it. So that word, because he is that, he just couldn't take the risk anymore, and he's out. So he's out of the match with Goldberg. Somebody else is in.
Because of his treatments for leukemia, his immune system is going to be compromised, is basically the reason for that. So
yeah, which,
like,
I think
he is someone who shouldn't be going out. He's incredibly high risk.
And I think a lot of people have brought this up over the last few weeks, but, you know, would it be okay for him and stuff? And, you know, he's obviously said that that's just not something he feels comfortable doing or should be able to do. WWE are, you know, they've sent him home, and there's now a different direction. I mean, I can't imagine that anybody would feel anything but good about the fact that Roman Reigns is kind of taking the safe approach here and just kind of staying out of Dodge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is absolutely the right call for him and for his health. There's no way that he should be wrestling right now. I mean, especially because even though they're being careful, right, like they're taking people's temperatures and they're trying to make sure that people are safe, you know, going into the buildings and, you know, before they taped the shows and whatnot. But there are no guarantees. Like, if you're out and about, then the virus is around and you really have to be super, super careful, right? Like, I was talking to my dad yesterday, and even he, who, like, he's taking it very seriously. He's like, yeah, I'm getting gas right now. And he's like wearing his plastic gloves to get gas. And my dad's healthy. Like, he doesn't have immunocompromisation. Like, he's, you know, he's 60. So he's, I guess, kind of right at the lower end of the age bracket that they say that you need to start being more careful. But I mean, it is a serious thing, and you really don't want to fuck with it. And if he were to get sick, it could be very, very bad for him. So good on Roman Reigns for making that call. I mean, health and safety has to come first. And I am very curious to see what they do and how they orchestrate the replacement that they found for him.
So I think the best way to kind of do this is I'm going to basically take a note of the next 60 seconds where we are going to discuss the replacement. But, like, if you want to, you know, go to the you know, 60 seconds when I say now, we will not be talking about it anymore, but we're going to talk about it in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the replacement for Roman is going to be Braun Strowman. What do you think of
Braun? Speaking of our friend Braun.
Speaking of it, what do you think of this choice?
I think it's underwhelming, but I don't know who else it would have really been. Braun Strowman wasn't on the WrestleMania card up until this point, right? So he was kind of a guy who was floating around with nothing to do. He was probably going to, I don't know, win a battle royal or something originally. So
wasn't on the card at all?
Wasn't on the card at all. And it's weird that Braun Strowman wasn't on the card, but at the same time, like, Braun Strowman hasn't been lighting anyone's world on fire lately.
Not got the best WrestleMania track record.
Yeah, what a WrestleMania track record he has too. It's an interesting choice. It's one of those situations where I'm like, now I don't want either of them to win. Like, can we just hold the title? Can Vacant win? Can Vacant just win the title?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think there's anybody else you could put in the spot, but I get why they are doing it. So, but we've discussed it. So
we
promised, you've put it back now. It's a minute later. We're not going to say who it is, but that's the choice. There's going to be an angle on SmackDown tonight, which is probably going to explain what's going to happen. So I mean, also The Miz is out of WrestleMania. He's not going to be participating in it. We know that Dana Brooke
was supposed to be doing something.
Yeah, it was going to, because tonight on SmackDown was going to be a match to determine who would face Miz and Morrison for the tag titles.
Oh, right. They're the champions.
So, Yes, they are.
No, and I knew that too because I watched part of SmackDown the other week, but I forgot.
So Miz is out, Dana Brooke is out because she's quarantined as well. So there's a few people. I wanted to ask you because we've talked about WrestleMania for the last couple of weeks and the kind of changing parts. And I mean, I think all of us, you, me, Finn, David, we've all kind of said, people kind of need the WrestleMania right now, and it'll be good for them to have it and, have some escapism for what's going on. How are you feeling about it now? We're 8 days out. How are you feeling about WrestleMania? It's been taped, it's in the can, as they say. Are you still feeling positive about watching it? Are you still feeling happy to have it be part of your life next weekend?
I mean, I hope that it's not terrible because I would like to say that I'm looking forward to it. At this point, I'm just tired. Like, I'm tired of pretty much everything right now. And WWE, I don't think has been all that compelling in the way they've been presenting their television. So it seems like they're just kind of like limping along with WrestleMania, and I just don't want WrestleMania to feel like it has this dark cloud over it, and it does. And that's nobody's fault. Like, the world sucks right now. So it would be nice to have some escapism, but I feel like the way WWE has been presenting everything, you can't help but just have it thrown in your face that everything is different and everything sucks. So a week ago, I thought it was like a really good thing that they were going ahead with it if they can, if it's safe. Now, like with all of the roster changes, with Roman's health situation, with all that kind of stuff, I don't know if it was really smart to go ahead and tape as much as they did, but like, I'm glad that it's taped. I'm glad that it's done. I'm glad people can go home now. I'm glad that they're not trying to continue this, I guess. Like, I have you heard anything about, I guess we can talk about AEW in a minute, but like, I don't know what AEW's plan is going forward because, I mean, they really have like stay at home in place orders pretty much all over the place right now, and that's not going to allow you to do a wrestling show. So
I
I
would
don't know.
imagine that I would imagine that we are not going to have an AEW for a little while. I mean, I know that there's an order that came into effect last night at 11 p.m. in, like, is it Orange County in Florida, where the performance center is, that basically said that you're not allowed to be out the house anymore apart from essential works. I mean, it feels like if you put the dots together, WWE knew that was going to be coming and had a heads up of when it was going to be. There's no secret that they were taping on the last 2 days that were available. Do you know, where I kind of sit in a weird way is I was looking forward to the idea of a WrestleMania, but I just I mean, from reading WrestleVotes that, like, all the talent don't want to be doing it, they would rather postpone it. I just feel like this is going to be a real dud of a WrestleMania, and, like, I just don't know how. Even watching AEW this week, like, I enjoyed it. I think that, like, last week when I watched AEW Dynamite, it had this, you had the heels and the baby faces at ringside. They can't do that anymore because I think that the order in most places is, like, you can't have more than 10 people in one place at one time, which would explain why, if you were watching, Dynamite, you'd have, at most five or six people involved in something, because then you needed cameramen to make it up to 10. And
Yeah, that's why they did the inner circle backstage kind of cheering or jeering or whatever instead of having like people at ringside.
And I just think that, especially for, like, a WrestleMania type thing, like, it needs to feel, I hope I'm wrong, I feel like this is going to be a shit show. Like, I feel like it's going to be an absolute shit show. Morbid curiosity has completely gotten me. Like,
Oh yeah, I'm very curious.
and, like, don't get me wrong, I will be the pro to this, and I think all of us will kind of share this, is that, like, next weekend we all get to sit down for 3 to 4 hours both nights and kind of forget about the, you can only go out once a day, or you can, you can't go and do this, you can't go and do that. So I think in that sense it's going to be good to have it, and it'll kind of feel like we're all together in something again. But there will be a point where, like, I'll go, oh, I'm supposed to be in Tampa right now, I have good Airbnb, seeing my pals. That's not going to happen.
I'm probably going to video call you at some point just to be like, hey.
Yeah, let's video call to. Because this is. So here's the other thing. So many people are like, hey, let's get on Zoom or Skype. And I'm like, I hate myself on FaceTime. I hate it. So, like, I'll do it with you because I get it. But, like, I'm not going to do it for ages. I hate being on video.
No, I'm not saying, like, for all of WrestleMania.
But, like,
I just
you know, some people, like, they are, like, having, like, oh, let's have a drinks night together on FaceTime. And I'm like, I don't know what the idea. I don't know if I'd rather sit down to karaoke, which is my other worst nightmare, or that.
See, the thing is, I love FaceTime, like, chats with people and all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm very used to it at this point. Like, there are a couple of my friends I talk to on video messenger, like, fairly frequently, and it's kind of nice because, like, the thing is, I don't have friends that live near me, so it's just kind of a way of life.
And I'm not saying, I mean, look, if you like it, go ahead and do it. But, like, the other thing was, I was saying to Steve Gunn yesterday, I was like, can you imagine if you still lived down south? Like,
oh yeah, that would be horrible.
There is a, like, because he was living down south, he moved home, he had a shitty job that he didn't like, then he decided to phone the old place that he worked and he got a store manager position again, he moved up, and then a month later this all kicks in. Like, it's very weird timing. But
yeah, I mean, at least, like, I know it's like a lot of time together all at once. A lot of time together, but at least you like each other, you know.
Well, luckily
that's positive.
He still works, right?
That's true. He's and, still, like, going out,
and he, like, you know, him and I, we've said this, and I'm only saying this because maybe some listeners will feel the same way. We're kind of like, I think we're doing what we need to do, right? We're doing all the instructed stuff that we need to do, right? We're staying home, we're doing all the stuff, but we're not kind of as up in arms about it all as I think most people are. Like, we're just trying to forget that it's happening, and I think it's just because we're luckily in a position where we can do that right now. But, like, I think we're just both kind of like, because he's still got his routine of going to work, so it's not like we have to be around each other 24/7. And then, you know, I get to still come and do this, so it kind of feels for
so
me.
It's not as much of a disruption for you.
No, for us it's fairly okay. And then plus I get to take Hulk out during the day for a walk, which kind of keeps me sane. So it's not, I mean, for, I think if you're someone who is in an office all the time or at work all the time and you're now just, like, in the house, that must be a big transition to make to try and, like, deal with that. But I think WrestleMania next weekend will, whether it's good or bad, it will bring us together in a weird way. And, you know, I hate saying cliched lines like that, but I think it will, and I think that's going to be a good thing. And I think also, I think they've taped through the night after WrestleMania. That's where they've taped everything through. I hope that after that, we just stop with wrestling for a while. Like, big budget. Like, WWE and AEW. Because the thing with AEW is, if AEW keep going, everything is supposed to be building to blood and guts, which is the next big thing. And I would rather, don't do that in front of nobody. Like, just wait and, you know, just do... You know, I mean, AEW are in a tougher spot because they don't really have archive stuff. So it's not like, you know, WWE could basically run on USA and Fox for the next 10 years and play archive stuff the whole time. AEW don't really have that luxury. I mean, I guess they could play pay-per-view stuff interspersed with, like, Hardy Compound stuff and whatever, but it's going to be rougher for them, but I hope that, like, I don't think they're going to have a choice soon because, like, I mean, you're in America, you know more than me. What are the kind of public mandates? Is it kind of
it depends where you are. It depends on the, like, on the state or on the municipality where you are. I know in Michigan right now there is a stay-at-home order, so if you are not an essential worker, which, like, I was considered an essential worker and had to make the decision to stay home because I didn't feel comfortable or safe working around so many people. Like, my store is not big enough and there are not precautions being taken, and it was a rough week. But basically, if you're not an essential worker, you're not supposed to be leaving your house except to, like, go to the grocery store or, you know, for essential services. So if you're not, like, getting supplies or provisions, you're supposed to just be at home. You're not supposed to go see people who don't live in your house. So, like, I mean, I'm not going to see my parents. I'm not going to see Mr. Saunders' parents. I talked to my dad the other day. He's like, we're not going to see the grandkids. Like, he's not going to see my brother and his wife and their kids and whatnot. Like, you're supposed to basically only be with the people who are in your immediate household and not be doing stuff. Like, that's how strict it is here. And I know in some places, like, police are actually, like, pulling people over and checking letters because you're supposed to have a letter issued in writing if you're an essential worker and you're traveling to and from work. So, I mean, I haven't heard of anyone being pulled over in Michigan to have, like, their papers checked, which is, like, a crazy thing to even think about. But one of my friends lives in, I'm trying to remember, I think he lives in Missouri somewhere, and he said that people were, you know, pulling people over and checking their stuff. So a lot of places are taking it very seriously.
The only thing that I'm doing, I'm pushing to admit this in a podcast, but fuck it. So, like, my mum is still coming over to see me because we made this decision a couple of days ago. We were like, because, like, she's a nurse and she, like, works in the NHS. And mm-hmm. she was like, do I still come and see you? Do I not? And I was like, I'm cool with it. You know, we're not going to hug. We're just going to keep our distance. But, you know, we've decided between us that that's something we're going to do. We're not, you know, we're keeping our social distance when she comes over. But, you know, I feel comfortable enough with it. You know, like, the other day, I had, like, a slightly sore throat. It was, like, an uncomfortable throat. So I called my doctor and he just basically said, you know, I described it and he said, you do not have coronavirus. So just, you know, I'll send a prescription to this pharmacy, go pick up this throat spray, which made me realize that I do have a gag reflex, insert your joke there, and so I've been taking that. So I think that we're just kind of, you know, I think that, I mean, all my mom is doing that is probably that she shouldn't do is when she finishes work, she gets in her car, she drives here, she parks outside the back of my house, she comes in, we sit and watch an hour of TV together, and she goes home and we never hug. So, you know, there's minimal risk there, but, you know, I guess maybe we shouldn't be doing that, but, you know, it's my call to do it. But here it's pretty intense. Like, I mean, I went for my one. So here you're allowed out the house once a day. That's it. You're allowed to go out once a day if you need to go and get something from the shop. So I went down to the supermarket this morning and there's, like, a queuing system to get in. And there's, like, they allow, like, six people in at a time. And then, you know, you stand sort of 2 meters apart from each other. So, you know, you just got to do what you can do. But, yeah, I mean, we were originally talking about WrestleMania. I think WrestleMania, I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to how much of a shit show it could be. Is that weird that my curiosity is that morbid?
No, because that's kind of what I'm looking forward to most about WrestleMania at this point. Like, I'm not really invested in the characters and the stories right now, just in WWE in general. So it wasn't like I didn't think that this was going to be, like, before everything exploded in the world, I didn't think that this was going to be, like, the worst WrestleMania card of all time. Like, I saw so many people being like, this card sucks and it's terrible, and I was like, I don't know, there are some things on there that actually look kind of good. Like, Charlotte versus Rhea sounded kind of good. Shayna versus Becky, into that. Drew versus Brock, very intrigued by that, especially if Drew wins for Scotland. So there were plenty of things that I was looking forward to, but now, like, with the programming feeling so kind of, like, chopped off at the knees, it's just, it feels like we're just, like, limping toward WrestleMania, and, like, everyone's just going to be exhausted by the time we get there, and we just kind of want it to be over. But I'm curious what it's going to look like.
They had, you know, to give WWE some credit, they did change the hard cam, thank God.
They did
get rid of the empty seats. Well, let's talk about NXT first before we talk about AEW, because AEW kind of, so NXT, you know, they did kind of use the empty arena to their advantage in the ways that they could. But, I mean, I felt like the first 90 minutes of this show were just, I think I've had more, no, that's too harsh. It was just very blah, would be my sort of analysis of it. Like, Steve Gunn, see, he had, like, went to work on yesterday morning at, like, 7 a.m., and then was working till 1, so he was going to come in. We were going to blitz AEW and NXT. And we were like, well, let's watch NXT first, because AEW is always the more exciting one. So,
right,
you know, don't build to the lesser one second in terms
Save
of
the best for last.
Exactly. So we stick it on, and it, I think it got to, like, oh, what was the match?
Was that the Caden Carter thing, or the... Tyler Breeze, Austin Theory.
It was...
I'm trying to remember what else happened on that show. Roderick Strong happened.
I think it was at the end of the Oni and Danny Burch thing. He was just like, I'm just going to go for a lie down. Like, he was just like...
Yeah.
Oh, no. It was Matt Riddle and Roderick Strong. He was like, I can't watch this. I need to go to bed. So he went to bed for like 2 hours. And I sort of, you know, trundled through it. But did you feel it was a slog of a show to get through?
It was kind of. And the thing is, I think it was like, I don't even have like other wrestling to watch right now other than IWTV archives, which could keep me occupied forever. But it's not like I had something else that was like really pressing to do. I just, there's a part of me that just doesn't feel like watching it right now, just because it reminds me of everything. Like, wrestling's supposed to be an escape, and watching these empty arena shows, the way that WWE is doing them, just, it doesn't feel like an escape. It feels like a chore to get through. And it seems like it's a chore for the talent to get through too. I don't think that they're meaning for that to come across, but that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting. So
someone made a great point on Twitter. I think Sam Hayworth, yeah. Anyways, and he had kind of said, like, because I think the Ciampa and Gargano stuff has been really strong, like, especially last week and this week, but like, it doesn't feel like it's like NXT TakeOver. When it gets to like WrestleMania season, usually feels like this is like one of the biggest cards of the year. It's like where the rivalries are going to, and it does not feel like that. It feels like Gargano and Ciampa does feel slightly rehashed, even though it is good. And most of this show just kind of felt like, even if, like, say you were to take away coronavirus and you were to, and there, it was in Full Sail with a crowd and all that, this does not feel like anywhere near the level of, like, I mean, remember a couple of years ago when we went to like TakeOver New Orleans 2 years ago, when that was, because that was one, that was that the original Gargano Ciampa match, or was it the second one? Or was that even a Gargano Ciampa match? It was Gargano and Ciampa, the unsanctioned match.
I'm trying to.
And that was when.
Yeah, the unsanctioned one. Yeah.
And if Gargano won, he was reinstated.
Because they had their streak in Chicago, I think.
Yeah, because you went to that, did you not?
Because I was at the street fight and I was at the unsanctioned match. And the street fight was in Chicago. Yes, the street fight was in Chicago because the girl sitting next to me was cheering for Ciampa and I was cheering for Johnny Gargano. And then, like, when he threw the wedding ring and stuff.
Yeah, like, but I mean, you know, for example, like, I've just pulled up the card here. Like, that TakeOver New Orleans card had Gargano and Ciampa in the unsanctioned match, which, like, if Gargano won, he was back in NXT. We had, you know, Andrade defending his NXT title against Aleister Black. You had the big three-way tag with Undisputed Era, Authors of Pain, and Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong, where Roderick Strong turned and joined the Undisputed Era. You had Shayna and Ember. You had this, that amazing six-man ladder match. But all the stories leading into that were really big. And I feel like when you look at this year, you kind of go, feels like a different planet.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is, like, I don't think that's their fault. Like, I think that they are just kind of, they're hampered by the situation that's going on right now. They can't do shows where they normally do shows. They can't do what makes them great because the circumstances are not allowing them to do that, and they're doing the best they can. And, like, honestly, I do applaud the effort. I know that I sound kind of down about everything right now, but I applaud them for trying. I applaud them for doing what they can under the circumstances, but the circumstances suck. So I don't know. Like, I actually really liked the Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa thing at the end of the show, though, with Triple H. Like,
although, was it not really weird?
It pains me to it.
Sorry.
With what?
Well, like, yeah.
No, I was just gonna say, it pains me to admit that Triple H, like, brought some gravitas to the segment and was kind of interesting about the whole thing. Like, Uncle Dad Paul Triple H, whatever. Like, NXT Dad Triple H is kind of a great character right now.
He does kind of walk that tightrope of, like, I'm in charge, but also giving respect to the performers very well.
Yeah, and I think when he said that, he actually made mention of William Regal, too, who I assume William Regal is just at home and not traveling right now as well he shouldn't. But he made mention of the fact, like, he called out the fact that Regal would probably just fire them, but he was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, like, here's the situation. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to let you guys fight all over the place. And I like that they're acknowledging that structure, too. It's not just like Regal has disappeared. Kind of like when Dusty Rhodes was commissioner of NXT and disappeared for like ages, and then all of a sudden JBL was there for reasons. Triple H just still kind of like, yeah, but I'm like the big boss here. But he still manages to feel like he cares about the show and like he cares about the performers involved in it.
Well, the thing that was, I did love the segment. I thought the segment was really good. Gargano came across great. Ciampa came across as like, you know, I think that having the big video package last week into this was really effective. But The one thing about it that just kind of felt like they led me down a path that they then turned away from was I thought that Triple H was going to go, this is too big. This needs to be on WrestleMania.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Because he kept going, this is so big. It has to end in the biggest stage. And he kept kind of building it as if it was like, it was going to be WrestleMania. And then it was like, 2 weeks, going to send you a text, going to get a ring, have a match. I'm like, okay.
I didn't even really think of it because WrestleMania already feels very full. Like, I don't understand why we're adding more matches to WrestleMania. I know it's over two nights now, but still, you don't want to watch like 2 5-hour shows. I don't, anyway.
No, you don't. But it's just like the whole segment felt like when he was building up, it felt like, because the thing is, Gargano and Ciampa does feel like a very big match, especially if it's going to be the end. And, you know, I would rather see that on WrestleMania than like Corbin and Elias and, you know, all these
Why the fuck is Corbin versus Elias a WrestleMania match?
Because Rob Gronkowski needs a heel to beat up?
Apparently so.
The main event segment was great. I thought it was, I mean, especially with the kind of the Killer Cross kind of teaser at the end, it was really strong.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. And the thing is, I like other stuff on the show too. I liked Tyler Breeze versus Austin Theory. I kind of liked their story of Tyler Breeze saying Austin Theory is a flash in the pan and Tyler's been here and he's kind of playing that established veteran role. I like that story. I think Xia Li getting beaten up and Io Shirai coming back and looking amazing because she's Io Shirai and she's great. Like, I like the fact that Io Shirai is back. That makes me happy because she's awesome.
Love her.
So it's not like, yeah, love her because she's amazing. I think they're doing right things. Like, they are doing good things. It's just, you know, the circumstances suck. And I keep saying that, but it's just true right now. Like, you can't paint over it and just, like, pretend that it's not happening.
Well, I do want to say, because I know a lot of people have asked, a lot of people have accused me, and I just want to set the record straight. I did not attack Xia Li for her ruining...
I thought it was your retribution for the Royal Rumble the past 2 years.
The thing is, I've got my alibi all tied up. There's a travel ban. I physically could done it. Like, you know, there's no way.
But you could have hired someone out.
Well, let's not be throwing theories about here. The only theory we should be...
I'm just saying, you do have friends at the Performance Center.
The only theory I want to talk about right now is Austin Theory.
nice translation. I see what you did there.
I thought Austin Theory and Tyler Breeze's match... I mean, I thought that... I'll get the bad thing out of the way. I thought that Breeze's beauty shot looked atrocious at the end. Looked really bad. But Theory obviously went down with it. But I thought that what was really good about it was that they really played up the idea. I made a note of this. There was only two people on the entire show who didn't adapt to there being no crowd and tried to play to a no crowd. And it was Cameron Grimes and... what was her name? Carter.
Caden Carter.
Caden Carter. They were the only two that still played to like people who were not there. But everybody else did a really good job of like not doing that, and especially Austin Theory and Tyler Breeze, when they were like jawjacking each other and like, you know, he's saying he's the future and then Tyler Breeze is using the phone, like I thought they were fairly inventive and not and adapting to what it was. So I was really happy to see them do that, given that on WWE shows I don't feel that's really happened that much so far on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, I don't think it has either. And I think you're right. I think that they did kind of make the best of their circumstances and they still managed to tell a story. Like, they were talking to each other, right? Like, they weren't trying to play to empty chairs. They weren't trying to, like, get people involved that weren't there. They were using the camera and using the phone and having an issue between one another. It worked for me. I liked it. Like, this is the kind of thing that it was kind of nice to watch a wrestling show, even though I wasn't necessarily like in the mood to watch the wrestling shows yesterday. I think they did some good things.
Yeah, with NXT, I was like, when I'm done with this, I can get to watch AEW. So I'm like, I've got my
AEW was like the prize.
My prize at the end of the tunnel. But anyway, I'm with you.
But I think NXT did pick up. I think having the Ciampa Gargano segment at the end and having Io Shirai come back just before that, I think like the first bit, even though I liked Austin Theory and Tyler Breeze, it did kind of just, it felt more like a chore. But I think towards the end, I was like, okay, this is wrestling again.
Io really lifted the show. She lifted the mm-hmm. show a lot. And her returning, I love her entrance. I love her. It's funny because I remember me just being like, oh God, here's this bird in the mask that I can't stand. And now I'm just like, oh, thank God she's back.
I mean, I know the moment of NXT where I felt the show turned tides. Malcolm Bivens is finally on NXT TV, Kenny.
Okay, because I was going to say, was it the moment that you saw Keith Lee wearing the worst hoodie that's ever been invented for merchandise?
No, it was not that moment. Yeah, it was the moment where Malcolm Bivens finally became a person on NXT TV. Finally.
After years,
I feel.
We saw Matt Riddle beat Roderick Strong, and then we saw two big dudes come out. Do you know who they are, by the way?
No idea.
Okay, good. So these two big guys...
Asad actually responded on Twitter and was like, the worst Indian stereotype ever. And I was like, let me have my Malcolm Bivens.
They looked like jacked Indian Usos, if you've not seen the... But like, I'm talking like old school Usos. But they came out and attacked Matt Riddle. And then Malcolm Bivens comes out and he cuts a promo talking about Pete Dunne's halfway across the world. And he's going to introduce Matt Riddle to the future of the NXT tag division. We don't hear their names, but Bivens is with them. So I've heard a lot about Malcolm Bivens. I know people really like him. So I'm excited to see what he does. So is he a wrestler or is he a manager?
More a manager. He has done wrestling as well.
Cool.
Like he is a wrestler too, but is primarily known as a manager, and he is just a delight. Like, if I'm honest, like this was not the most Malcolm Bivens entrance for Malcolm Bivens to be making. Like, it felt kind of generic. He was just kind of like, I'm here. I like his logic. I like the logic of Pete Dunne is across the world, so I'm going to attack you, tag team champion man. Well, you're down because I am a dastardly piece of shit, and I'm going to, you know, like divide and conquer basically. So I like his logic. Team's name, or were they, because I don't actually know, because I haven't really been following the Florida House Show loop as well as I used to.
I can't even find who they. I tried to look at who they are, like online and stuff, and I can't get anything. So you know, hopefully it'll come out in the next few days who they are. But I'm excited to see Bivens turn up and see what he's going to do whenever things get picked up again. I do want to give props on this show to Tom Phillips and Byron Saxton. I thought they were really good in commentary.
Yeah, they were great.
They were very good. But on AEW, there was a lot of stuff that happened that we're going to go into. So obviously this week they did a similar presentation to last week. The only thing that was changed was that they weren't able to do the wrestlers, you know, playing the fans at ringside. They also opted to have JR stay home and have Excalibur and Taz stay home. It was Tony Schiavone on commentary, sometimes with Cody, sometimes with Kenny Omega, sometimes with both. How did not having the wrestlers as fans impact the show, if at all?
I think it felt more obvious that they were in an empty arena. I think having the Inner Circle backstage reacting in some form or fashion, I think still helped it, but it definitely did feel more quiet. I think having the wrestlers ringside helped you kind of forget that there wasn't a big crowd because there were still, you know, people reacting to things. But again, like circumstances being what they are, it is not a good idea to have as many people together. So I totally understand it. But I think the show still worked. And it's weird. I'm not someone that normally focuses on buildings, right? Like, you know, that's more your thing than my thing. But I think AEW is still happening in an arena and feeling bigger. And for them to still have like the same production that they normally have. I know the hard cam is in a different spot, but mm-hmm. like still doing the graphics, still having the music, still... It felt more like a regular show than these Performance Center, Raw, SmackDown, NXT have felt to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And I think it's it's one of the luxuries that AEW have got is that they have this place, you know, an arena-sized place that they own that they can just mm-hmm. go to and use. You know, WWE's version of that is the Performance Center, which obviously does not look anywhere near as big.
Right.
So yeah, no, and I think it's fair. I think it definitely this week felt more like an empty arena show. I was still entertained by a lot of it, but I thought it was a tale of two guys like on commentary. Cody Rhodes in commentary was absolutely fucking great. Like he was
awesome. He's so good at everything.
At one point, he was like, I think it was during Guevara and Omega. He was like, or wasn't it? No, it was during Darby Allin and Kip Sabian. He was like arguing with Tony Schiavone about Star Trek captains. No, it would have been another match. Anyway, he was arguing during one match with Star Trek captains.
It was during Sammy Guevara and Kenny Omega because Sammy Guevara had the captains like as the audience.
Yes, so it's during that match he's arguing with Tony Schiavone about the best captain in Star Trek while also in the same sentence calling the match.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. It was so good. And it did lead to a discussion with Mr. Sondra and me as to who the best Star Trek captain was, of course.
And for those who are Trekkies out there, who is the best Star Trek captain in your opinion?
In my opinion, I don't really have an opinion because I don't watch Star Trek that much. But I had to ask Mr. Sondra how he felt about Cody Rhodes casting aspersions against Sisko. And Mr. Sondra says that Cody Rhodes can go straight to hell for that.
Harsh words. I know nothing about Star Trek, so I'm not going to... I'm not going to try. Anyway, now on the opposite...
I've always been more of a Star Wars girl. I mean, I like Star Trek fine, but...
Well, so I got Disney Plus because it's just come out here in the UK. So I think I'm going to maybe at some point try...
Are you going to actually watch Star Wars?
I'm going to try at some point. One
does,
day...
Does Steve Gunn enjoy a Star War?
I don't know. I've never asked him that question. I'll ask him.
I'm just curious if like you should watch it with someone who, you know, enjoys it. Not necessarily now, someone who's like a super fan, because then they're going to have all these expectations for you. But...
Am I right in saying, because I'm sure somebody told me this before, that you watch it 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3?
I would say watch 4, 5, 6, skip 1, 2, 3 entirely.
Oh, because people hate the Ewan McGregor era of Star Wars.
It's very bad.
Okay. Like WrestleMania 9 bad that it's good, or like December to Dismember 2006 bad that it's just bad?
December to Dismember.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, I'm gonna I think I'll give Star Wars Episode 4, which I guess is the first one, I'll give it a go at some point and see how I feel. But anyway, the other tale on this show.
Feel free to text me any thoughts that you have about
Star Wars.
I will
try to. I'm a very weird person, as you've probably known by listening to me for years on the podcast. But, like, there will be a day where I go, I think I'm going to try and watch the Star Wars right now. Like, I've still not had the day yet where I feel like I want to watch The Godfather, the movie. Because
I've never seen The Godfather.
Because, like, everybody says it's the greatest movie that's ever happened. And I feel like that's such high praise. If I go in thinking that, it's going to be problematic. So,
but that's kind of how I feel about Citizen Kane. I've never seen Citizen Kane.
Me neither.
And I know that it's going to be great. Like, I know that. But I just have never seen it.
The other tale on this show is I thought that Kenny Omega on commentary came across like the most pompous, unrelatable guy. Like, it's funny to me that, like, Cody just is able to do this thing that Kenny isn't able to do. Like, Kenny Omega just comes across like such a square.
He is an alien who doesn't know how to fit into the human world. We've discussed
like,
this.
He loves it. He loves a gentleman's contest. And like, there was one point where, like, I can't remember if he said, like, to was it about having a drink or something? He asked like if somebody had had a drink, and I was like, oh god, just because you don't like fun, Omega. You know, like in my mind, I was like, he just. I think the thing with Kenny is that Kenny's strength is that he's quite wacky, right? Like he's a wacky guy. So on commentary, I feel like if you're a Kenny Omega guy or a Kenny Omega gal or anything in between, you know, he's all for you. Whereas I feel like Cody's more like, even if you don't like Cody, you can be like, oh, he was fucking good in commentary. Like, I feel like he was just, whenever Cody was in commentary, I enjoyed it a lot more. I just felt Omega was quite forced at times.
Well, and I think Omega, like, because Omega lived in Japan for so long, and because that's more his frame of reference than American wrestling, I think that came through on his commentary. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I don't think Kenny Omega was bad on commentary, but I think it did often feel like he was trying to shoehorn in Japanese references that I don't necessarily understand. And that's on me, like, for not knowing Japanese wrestling as well as, you know, some people do. But for an American TV audience, it's good to make those comparisons, but it just kind of felt almost like he was, I don't know, I could see what he was trying to do, and I just don't think it landed as well as he intended. Like, there was one point where, I can't remember what match it was, but someone like bridged out of something. He's like, oh, like a Rio-esque bridge out. And it's cool. Like, he's putting over Rio, who's on the show. And like, I think he's trying really hard to incorporate like the, you know, the wrestlers that he is friends with and that he has worked with a whole lot. And he's trying to put them over. And I get that. But there were times where those sorts of references just seemed to kind of come out of nowhere or feel forced.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, because he was in commentary first when Cody had his match with Jimmy Havoc. My favorite part of that was because you mentioned they had this kind of screen backstage, which was like a room of like Shawn Spears is taking bets again in wrestling. Dasha Fuentes was in there showing more charisma than she did in her 4-year run in WWE. But my favorite bit was like when Jericho turned up and you just hear him, it cuts to Jericho, he's just like, Havoc, Havoc, Havoc. Yeah. So good.
I was so happy to see Jimmy Havoc on Dynamite.
Yeah,
and I like Jimmy Havoc.
He's a fun performer. He had a good match. He wears a top now, which is also very good because it suits him better. His look's got a little bit better than it was before. It looks a bit more prime time. And even though
I liked him going over and doing the whole like I'm on commentary now thing too, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, exactly. So Cody gets the big win, but then we cut to a video package of Jake Roberts. He says that Lance Archer's biting the bit to get in the ring with him. He demands a match, offers, you know, let Cody put MD in the ring with Archer to show that he was ready. And then he says, you know, bring the old man. And then my favorite bit was he was like, bring your women, you know, you're the Bill, she's the Monica. Like, he branded Brandy as Monica Lewinsky.
He was saying like all that, like Anthony Cleopatra or maybe like Bill and Monica, and I was like, you sleazebag.
Yeah, absolute sleazebag move, but like that is going to make it all the sweeter when Cody eventually pops him in the mouth for doing it. And I know why Jake Roberts has not had a role on national television in all these years because he had problems, but like I think he's just a very captivating person to watch and listen to, so... when he said old man, I was like, oh god, he's not going down the dusty route, is he? But he said Arn Anderson, so it wasn't. But we'll see what he can do. Cody's gonna give him a match next week or on the next Dynamite, and we're gonna go from there.
Yeah, because Lance Archer is gonna get to debut next week, but it's not gonna be against Cody. He's not gonna start there. Which, again, Cody walks this line where he should sound kind of pompous and arrogant. Right? Like, that should be kind of an arrogant thing to say. Like, you have to work to get to me because I'm that important. But for some reason, for some magical reason, he's Cody Rhodes and it works. It just works for him. I think it's obvious that we are both Cody Rhodes fans on this podcast, but like, he's just so good. And I thought his response to Jake Roberts was pretty perfect when he came back to the commentary table. It got to him. He was like, you don't say that shit about my wife. Like, you don't say that shit about my family. That's not cool. But he didn't like lash out and make it necessarily all about him. And Cody, I think, pointed to Lance Archer better than Jake Roberts pointed to Lance Archer, because I think Cody was talking about Lance Archer as like a really important, you know, dude. Whereas Jake Roberts is like very captivating and an important part of the show. But I feel like everyone's so captivated by Jake Roberts that you almost forget that Lance Archer is supposed to be the point of it all.
I think it's going to be interesting to see when Lance Archer finally gets in the ring, how him and Jake interact. That'll be the test of if this partnership is going to stand the test of time. We also saw Darby Allin get the win over Kip Sabian. That was fun to see those guys going at it. Cody again was putting them over big on commentary. That was fun.
Yeah, really good. I liked it a lot.
Jake Hager beat a guy called Chico Adams, and then post-match John Moxley came out. He hit the paradigm shift, but Hager like recovered pretty much instantly. I guess maybe we're heading towards Hager versus Moxley. And I mean, the idea that Dean Ambrose versus Jack Swagger sounds captivating is, I guess, a testament to the fact that the character work with these two has been so good.
Yeah, they're doing all the right things, because that's a match I want to see. And that is definitely... I never wanted to see Dean Ambrose versus Jack Swagger, funnily enough. But Jake Hager versus John Moxley, I'm here for it. I think that'll be a really interesting confrontation.
Then we had the Exalted One, Brody Lee, much better gear this week. He was taking on QT Marshall, or as everyone in the world calls him, QT Marshall, or as Dave Meltzer says, QT Marshall, which makes no sense. It's not Marshall.
No, I don't understand why he says Marshall. Like, it's Marshall. It's fine.
And then, like, he came out and I was like, why has QT Marshall got an apple in his logo? And it's like, oh, because he always has an apple. And I'm like, does he? Like, but, like, it's not like he's, like, spitting in the face of people who don't want to be cool. As Carlito used to do. Like, because Carlito was like, he had the apple because the apple was a gimmick because he spat the apple in people's face. Why has QT Marshall got an apple?
I don't know.
And God bless Cody in this match trying to put across QT as a big star. He tried. He really did.
He tried. Well, because, I mean, like, you know, QT Marshall is friends with Cody Rhodes, obviously. And QT Marshall, like, runs the training school that Cody Rhodes is taking over. So, like, QT is going to be very important. Yeah, the Nightmare Factory. One of my friends trains there. So, it's kind of cool. But, yeah, like, QT Marshall is going to be very important to the future of AEW, kind of in a behind-the-scenes sort of way. And I like the fact that he's getting to be on Dynamite and have these matches and stuff. Like, he's not necessarily the guy that's going to be main eventing for the championship, but I think he's an important part of the Nightmare family at this point. I like him.
He's fine.
I also just love Brody Lee so very completely. And,
well, I need to ask you this question. So Brody Lee obviously beats QT Marshall. And and then we get the, I can't remember, after this or before this, but anyway, we get the vignette. It was before this.
It was before.
We get the vignette of him eating steak and not letting the Beaver Boys eat their steak. And then one of them sneezes and he goes crazy. So basically he's making nods to Vince. Now, this is kind of polarized opinions. You know, some people really like the inside reference. I know Meltzer had said he wasn't a fan of it and said that this is, you know, like pot shots like WCW and WWF used to do. I mean, I know it's involving one of your favorites of all time, so you may be biased in your response, but, like, how do you feel about it? How do you feel about the pot shots of Vince in this?
I thought it was kind of funny. I don't mind a pot shot if they're funny. And especially when it's Brody Lee, it's going to, obviously, I love him. It worked for me because it was also building the character of the Exalted One as, like, this utter prick, right? Like, he is not a benevolent leader. He is someone who wants you to worship at his feet, and he is someone who is, like, a crazy cult leader, right? And those sorts of attributes kind of fit with a crazy cult leader, because you could say, like, Vince McMahon has a lot of tendencies of, like, a crazy cult leader of being very charismatic and, like, all sorts of idiosyncrasies and all that kind of stuff. So, like, is it kind of ridiculous, and I can see why it polarized people? Yes. But at the same time, I thought it was, I don't know. I don't think it was, like, harmful, and I don't think it got in the way of the story that they're trying to tell. When I don't like shots like that, or when, you know, it doesn't make sense, it's not funny, and it's just so very clearly meant to, like, take a shot at someone, but it doesn't make sense in the story. I think this made enough sense in the story and in the character that they were trying to establish that I don't have a problem with it. And I think Brody Lee performed his Vince McMahon impression very well.
I loved it. I think, like, I love a pot shot.
It was fun,
like,
right?
I live for a pot shot. Like, I'm like, give me one of those. And, like, the thing is, like, he's a cult leader, and he, you know, from last week when he debuted, the whole thing was like, you know, you're not the first old man to not believe in me. It's like, it's wrestling. Like, it's not like he's coming out here and, like, be, you know, if he was coming out and doing, like, a promo to Vince McMahon and whatever, I get why that might be like, oh, that was so 20 years ago. But, like,
this did not feel like an Oklahoma situation.
No, it did. No, not at all. I thought this was fun. Like, I think that to kind of pick this apart and be like, oh, it's just a pot shot, is, nah, it's funny. Wrestling's allowed to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Sammy Guevara against Kenny Omega for the AAA Mega Championship. Sammy Guevara's, like, portraits on the chairs of the Star Trek captain and Jericho and Brandy ended me. So
incredible.
Good.
Incredible.
Brandy's... I want my new wallpaper on my phone to be Brandy's face looking at Sammy making out with the card. Like, I turned to Steve Gunn and I was like, that's probably the only sort of purported sexual assault. Sandra, be like, I find that one okay. That one's okay because it's not on the person. It's like,
well,
to
he's
effect.
making out with a card. He wasn't like
Exactly.
actually forcing a person.
And then
You know, like that's a different situation.
And then Cody sold it really well in commentary because he was like, you know, she doesn't seem mad by it, so I'm not going to, like, you know, step in her way here. But if she seemed in any way upset about it, I would, of course, step in and, you know. So he was being chivalrous. You know.
But not like, and he doesn't come across like that crazy overprotective husband either, which I like.
He's not Randy
because
Savage.
Because he's not Randy Savage. But he's also, you know, who did this a lot worse was Daniel Bryan. Like, remember when Daniel Bryan and Brie were like together on screen and it was all like, you don't talk about my wife and my wife and my wife this and my wife that, and it became almost like he owned her in a way. And you know that I love Daniel Bryan and I love Brie Bella, and you know, like I was happy to see the mixed tag, but I never liked how possessive he sort of started to seem. And I think, again, Cody Rhodes just walks that fine line so brilliantly. Why is he the best at everything? He's just so good.
If you want to hear his commentary, I mean, really just for this match is the best. There's at one point where he's like putting Guevara over and he's like, what a dickhead haircut. He just like, so good. I thought this match...
Yeah, so he doesn't feel disingenuous on commentary either. Like, he's still very much Cody Rhodes. He's still very much himself, like, having the interactions with these people. You know, like, his feuds and his biases are not removed from the story, but it helps to add to the story.
Yeah, and, like, Guevara's an arsehole. Like, him doing the thing to the Brandy card was really clever because it's a way to get the heat with the wife, but without actually, like... force kissing the wife, because that's just not where you should be doing anymore. But I mean, I do think this match suffered from not having a crowd in some ways. I think that if it had a crowd, it would have been better. I could have done with it maybe having like 7 minutes shaved off it. Kind of felt like it went on a bit too long for me, but I can see that.
And I mean, it was just for a title too, so it was, I think it being for the title helped it for me, just make it feel a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good, and Cody and commentary was great. And Sammy Guevara, man, I'm so into his gimmick. It's so good.
He's awesome. He's one of my favorite parts of AEW right now.
Chris Jericho cuts a promo on Vanguard 1, and he is disgustingly
first
good at
name
the job.
Van, last name Guard, second last name 1, ended me.
So good. And he's like, he basically talks down to him and then he's trying to recruit him. He's like, you're a piece of shit. I don't like your political views on social media. What?
It was one of those things that, like, again, it could have gone either way, right? Like, it could have just sounded like Chris Jericho being up his own arse and trying to pop himself, or it could have been brilliant, and he managed to make it brilliant, and I loved this segment. It was so funny. It was just so funny. Like, by the time Matt Hardy, like, actual Matt Hardy came out, I was like, I would have been happy with just the Vanguard 1 promo, honestly.
Which was so good. And then we have Matt...
Not that Matt Hardy wasn't great. Matt Hardy was great, too. I loved Chris Jericho and Vanguard 1's interaction.
It was so great. And then, like... you know, Matt Hardy's teleporting, we see him at the top of the arena, then we see him come all the way down. It was really cleverly shot. And then they have this back and forth where, you know, Matt's calling him the maker of pain, and basically the whole gist of it is that Jericho wants to recruit Matt Hardy to the inner circle. He's saying, you know, you've been the product of bad booking and, you know, the shadow of your brother and all that kind of stuff, and Matt's trying to delete him, and you know, he's saying that, you know, there's all these people in the arena, but all these souls in the arena, but Jericho can't see them, and he's pointing at Martin Luther King and all these people. And then in the end, when Matt decides he's going to delete the inner circle, Sammy Guevara comes out to attack. Omega and Cody run down to make the save. So we've got Omega, Cody, and Matt Hardy standing tall with Jericho and Sammy kind of running away. I'm curious, what do you think of this incarnation of Broken Matt Hardy compared to... like the previous Broken Matt Hardy that we saw in 2016, has he made enough changes? Did he need to make any changes? And sort of compare the two, because obviously he went through the Woken period in WWE where it was fairly watered down and didn't really mean anything. How is this incarnation now that we've got to hear a promo?
This seems very similar to 2016. I don't know that I would say that there are a whole lot of differences that I can see yet, but it feels like a return to form in a good way. Like, I still want to see more of it, and I want to see where it goes, because I don't want it to become like the greatest hits of Broken Matt Hardy, if that makes sense. I want him to keep innovating and keep doing new things, which I totally believe that he's capable of doing. Obviously, like, he's referencing certain past things. He's now saying that he's Damascus, like Damascus is inhabiting the vessel of Matt Hardy or whatever. And I'm very curious to see where that goes and what happens with that, because it almost seems like he's taking on a new persona to kind of move the story forward and to not just feel like a greatest hits tour. So I liked it quite a lot. I mean, I loved their interaction. I was still giggling from Jericho calling Vanguard One Mr. Guard. So I didn't pay as much attention to Matt Hardy as I probably should have at first. But no, I mean, he's awesome. He's really awesome. And it seems like he fits here, and it seems like he's allowed to breathe in a way that he couldn't really do in WWE, because, you know, WWE is WWE production, and that's fine for what they do. But if you want, like, true creativity and true, like, spirit in your art, then you have to just kind of let people run free, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Matt Hardy definitely suffered from not having a crowd. I think that that was... I think that Jericho's part you could do with crowd or not with crowd. I think the Matt Hardy character, the broken character, really feeds off a crowd. And I think that's why I'm kind of hoping that AEW don't do too many more shows, because I think that what would be really helpful for Matt is to basically just start doing some Hardy Compound stuff and start making that, like, the, you know, build that audience to, you know, because, I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head how many people were watching TNA in late 2016 or whatever, compared to the, say, you know, 1 million with, or 1.5 million with DVR numbers that are watching AEW. But I think that there's enough people who remember it, but there's some people who are not going to be as familiar with it. So I hope that he can kind of build on it, because I think he does have something here, but I think that too much empty arena, broken mat would, I just don't think that would be good for him. But I think
maybe they need to take advantage of the Hardy Compound. I mean, especially right now when you can't really be doing tons of arena stuff anyway, it's a good opportunity to do some Hardy Compound, like get Rebby Hardy behind a camera again. And because, you know, like, she's involved in a whole lot of that stuff. So,
and that's what got the Broken Universe over, was the Hardy Compound stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, film some stuff there. Let Matt do what Matt does. Let Matt and Rebby do what Matt and Rebby do. Get the kids involved if that's cool. I don't know what the rules are for putting on them on television, but, you know, all the stuff that worked for them, keep letting them do that because it worked.
Yeah, and I thought the segment was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it. I know that I think Broken Matt is going to work for some people and not work for others, but I think the key to Broken Matt is going to be vignettes and Hardy Compound stuff and all that, and I think he's going to get to do that.
I trust that he can bring people around too, because I remember, like, with the Final Deletion and stuff, there were some people who were not on board. And then as it just got more and more and more brilliant, then, you know, people kind of came around to it and were like, oh, this is really fun. Some people never did, and that's fine. Not everything has to be for you. But, you know.
It's not some people's fault they have bad taste. That's fine.
Exactly. You're allowed to have the wrong opinion.
But yeah, I thought AEW was a fun show. And I do kind of hope that we are done with the empty arena shows kind of after WrestleMania. Like, I don't think it's going to help the characters after that. I think it's kind of, I think in some ways the break would be good. I mean, I don't know if TNT would allow it, but I mean, you know, Darby Allin on this show, he did his vignette that he filmed. I think that AEW could do sort of like shows where they do tours in TNT where they have like Shivani in the control center, and, you know, they show a pay-per-view match, they show some vignettes, they do some story arc stuff, do some like Road 2 stuff, and make up a show that way. That's maybe an option. Mm-hmm. if you have to do something, if you have to have a show in there, but I guess we'll see. So, I mean, that's it for us. We're going to be back on Sunday with an overrun over on Patreon. We'll do some retro stuff over there. And then this time next week, we will be back to talk maybe an AEW show. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see what the rest.
We don't know. We don't know what's going on. I mean, everything is still kind of changing all the time, and we don't know what's going to happen, and we don't know what any of these wrestling shows are going to look like. So we're just kind of playing it by ear. we're doing what we can. We'll be here talking to you guys.
Which... yeah, and of course we will over on Patreon have WrestleMania reviews. We'll be talking about WrestleMania. I assume we'll probably talk on the Sunday about the Saturday one, on the Monday about the Sunday one. Like
that would make a good deal of sense.
We're gonna make sure we're here to break it all down for you. So that is that. Sandra, what are the plugs, please?
You can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. I know that we've said it lots of times, but it's sort of the next point in my spiel. Just thank you to everyone who's signed up over the past couple weeks, too. Like, it's been nice. Like, it's just been nice to see that people care. And I know that sounds stupid and cheesy, but, like, legitimately, I'm having a rough time right now. And it is really nice to hear from you guys and know that you support us in what we do. Because y'all are keeping us afloat right now. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is another way to support us. You can watch our videos, like them, subscribe, do all of the things on YouTube. There's a lot of fun interview content that's always kind of going up there from, you know, live shows. I know a new video with Goldberg just came up recently, and there's all sorts of fun stuff to check out there. InsideTheRopes.co.uk is our website. You can go there and look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Go there, look at it. Remember when we used to be able to bring people
it's
to
good.
The shows? not better about that anymore.
You know, I don't know what else to say. It's the website. Things are congregated there. Ollie does a good job with it.
He does a great job, yeah. Okay, so to play us out, let's play the music of Roman Reigns, since he had the sense to go home and, you know, quarantine himself. We'll be back next week with more. Thanks for all your support, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.